So today we continue with our series on the creative process based on the first creation story in the Bible, the first book of Genesis. And remember last week we looked at that story and remember it began by saying that the earth was full of void and darkness covered the earth. And then God said what? Let there be light. And there was light. We picture that light as like a sudden burst of spiritual energy, and the light overcomes the darkness. So the first step of the blueprint of creation and of the creative process in our lives is light. And light represents awareness, the awareness that God's light is. And we know that there is no darkness so dense, so menacing, are so difficult that it cannot be overcome by light. And remember, we said that darkness represents a lack of spiritual understanding. Light is the illumination, the awareness of God as our source of good, and the realization that that inner light of God expresses in every single one of us. Now notice, at this point of the creation story, we have light, but things are still completely without form. Day two is really important because this is where things begin to take shape. So we continue our story, and I'm using today the King James Version. We continue our story with Genesis 1, 6 through 8. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. Now, here we have to remember that in antiquity, people thought they had absolutely no scientific knowledge beyond anything they could see with the naked eye. And therefore, of course, they thought that the earth was flat. They also thought that there was a firmament, an overarching canopy of the sky. One Persian poet, Omar Kelgahan, described the firmament as an inverted bowl on top of the earth. Now, the word for firmament is often translated in many versions of the Bible as dome. The original Hebrew concept was that this canopy-like covering was a rigid dome held up on both sides by arches or pillars above which there was a heavenly ocean. This is a picture of the early view of the universe. This is what they pictured it looking like. Now, I guess they looked up and saw the blue of the sky, and they thought that the sky was water. It makes sense in a way, without all our scientific knowledge. They also thought that there were windows up in the dome through which the waters could come down as rain, and through which the sun, moon, and stars could shine. And below the firmament in the earth, they thought that there were hidden channels through which the water of the underlying deep had created the seas. This was the way the ancient world viewed the sky, the elements, and the heavens above. And the heavens above were considered to be God's supreme realm. It's interesting, isn't it, about the early concept of the universe? And obviously, modern science has long since disproved this view, and yet the story that describes the creation has great metaphysical and symbolic meaning for each of us about the creative process. The facts may not have been accurate, but there are deep truths in this story. Day one is about universal potential, the explosion of light energy. And out of that energy on day two comes form. And the question for us today is, how do we emulate this process as we strive to create what we desire in our lives? You know, sometimes we get that flash of insight, and often it might be based on a void or an earthly need or desire. Emily Cady says, desire is from God. Desire in the heart is always God tapping at the door of our consciousness with infinite supply. and our job is simply to open the door. But remember, a couple weeks ago when we started this series, we looked at this definition of creativity, and it was from Linda Naiman, founder of Creativity at Work. She writes, "Creativity is the act of turning new and imaginative ideas into reality. Creativity involves two processes, thinking and producing. If you have ideas but don't act upon them, you are imaginative but not creative." So day two of this ancient story is where God creates the firmament, the foundation for bringing our insights into manifestation. And the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary tells us that firmament represents faith. And God called the firmament heaven. Now this means when faith is firmly established in our consciousness, the result is a perfect state of harmony, therefore heaven. Heaven is the realm of divine ideas. Metaphysically, the water represents unexpressed, infinite possibilities in mind. And so at the end of the second day, another degree of spiritual unfoldment has been accomplished, the power of faith. And there was evening and there was morning, a second day. Evening represents completion, and morning represents activity of ideas. So Charles Fillmore, our co-founder, calls the power of faith the perceiving power of the mind, filled with the power to shape substance. In other words, faith is our ability to take that inspiration, our desires, our dreams, and bring them into manifestation. Faith makes the seemingly impossible possible and real. Step two is where we grasp the light, our awareness, and make it take shape in our lives. I'm one behind there. And Linda Martella Whitsett, in her book Divine Audacity, I love that title, Divine Audacity, she says, faith is the power that realizes, that means makes real, the image we hold in our heads. You know, sometimes we hear people say, I lost my faith, or I don't have any faith. Fortunately, that really is impossible. Faith is one of the 12 powers of the Christ, and we all have it. The question is, where are we placing our faith? Because when you think about it, fear is faith, worry is faith, insecurity is faith. These are all faith in the wrong things, in temporary appearances and conditions. Sorry. The thing is, our awareness, our consciousness is pivotal. It can turn either way. We can center our awareness on our divine identity or on our human nature. And where our nature, where our awareness is, there is our reality. Last week, for those of you who were here, we looked at the monkey business illusion video. Remember that? And the first time I saw that clip, I was in a class at the Village, and I just could not believe that that gorilla had been there the first time around. In fact, some of us in class asked the teacher to go all the way back to the beginning of the video. We had to see it for our own eyes. We couldn't believe we missed it. Well, the reason we missed it is it wasn't in our consciousness. It wasn't our focus. And research by the Gallup Corporation and lots of other research organizations show us that we tend to take into our minds what matches the patterns that are already there. Our beliefs, our thoughts, our mental models determine what we see and what we ignore. I once had a neighbor, Bob and I once had a neighbor, I'm going to call her Tina. I'm changing the name to protect the guilty in this case. Tina was a wonderful person. She really was. However, she had this one, well, maybe she had others, but this one little quirk that I knew about, and that is she really had very negative attitudes toward teenage boys. I don't know how it happened or where she got them, but she did. And she thought every single teenage young male was delinquent, you know, a drug user. She just thought they were, you know, the devil incarnate. She really did. And she had young children, and I didn't have the heart to tell her that someday her three-year-old would grow up to be a young teenage boy. I guess she'd never thought about that. But at any rate, one day, next door to us on the other side, we had a new family move in, and guess what? They had, you guessed it, a teenage boy. I think he was about 15. His name was Craig. And she absolutely thought the neighborhood was doomed. I mean, I expected a for sale sign on her house any day. She was just going on and on about how the neighborhood will never be the same now that we had teenagers in the neighborhood. So one day, I went out to check my mail, and I almost said her real name. Tina went out to check her mail, and Craig was next door mowing the lawn. So I went over to her and I said, you know, look at Craig. He's over there mowing the lawn. See, that just proves what a good kid he is. I told you that all along. She looked at me and she said, boy, you are really gullible. She said, you know, there's only one reason he's over there mowing that lawn, and that's because he's in big trouble. He's probably grounded, and that's part of his punishment. And I tell that story just to emphasize that really and truly, we can both look, two of us can look at the exact same data. We can take in the same data, and depending on what we have in our heads, we see it differently, and our reality is different. And it's really true that we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. And the point is that our faith is based on our perceptions, our awareness, our consciousness. Martilla Wetzet says, our perception is so critical to our experience of reality that it would be wise for us to question our perceptions and to seek the greatest truth that we can fathom as the basis for our viewpoint. The greatest truth we can fathom. Now, we've talked about this before. As spiritual beings having a human experience, we actually live and dwell in two realms. First of all, we dwell in the absolute realm. That's what the early Hebrews thought was up in the sky, the absolute realm. This is where all accords with God as divine principle. It's the unseen realm of divine ideas in all their purity and power. Pure ideal good, eternal wholeness, boundless love, perfect life, and overflowing abundance. This is the realm of infinite possibilities. And at exactly the same time, we dwell in this relative realm. This is our constantly changing outer world, the physical plane. It's what we see and hear with our senses. Jesus taught and demonstrated that looking beyond what we see with our physical eyes to the greater truth of the spiritual realm is what we have to do. I loved your song today. It was perfect. It's perfect. Looking beyond what we see to those true colors within of each other. And this is what it means to walk by faith, not by sight. Standing on the firmament of faith means we understand that we are afloat on a sea of infinite possibilities, and we are limited only by our own consciousness. Because here's the thing, any existing condition in the relative plane can be healed and transformed. We can draw from the absolute realm at any moment of our lives. And no matter what's occurring in the outer, we have that choice. We can turn our pivotal souls to the light of our spiritual identity and align ourselves with all those divine ideas. Or we can turn to the darkness we see in this world and the darkness we see in others. It's important for each of us to ask ourselves, am I placing my faith in a diagnosis or in my wholeness, in my bank balance or in divine substance, in a failing relationship or in love and harmony? And the greatest truth that we can ever seek is the absolute, eternal, never-changing truth of God. And when we align ourselves in that love and goodness, that love and goodness of the divine, and realize our own special spiritual essence, we connect to infinite possibilities, and then we begin to manifest those possibilities in our lives. This is how the invisible becomes visible on the second day of creation, and it's also how the invisible becomes visible in our lives. As we're told in Hebrews 11:1, Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And Paul actually goes on a couple of verses after that to say, by faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen is made from things that are not visible. So faith, in other words, takes hold of the things we desire from the invisible realm and brings them into the world of expression. Katie explains, we come to understand that whatever we want is already there in this surrounding invisible substance. Faith is that quality that helps us look past appearances of illness, lack, or limitation to grab hold of those divine ideas and believe in them, despite any seeming evidence to the contrary. Emily Cady makes a distinction between what she calls blind faith and understanding faith. Now, blind faith may be based on ignorance, superstition, or luck, you know, like having a lucky charm with you. Or it may even be based on an instinctive trust in a higher power. But because blind faith is not based on understanding of spiritual principle, it all often leads to discouragement and disappointment. If we see ourselves and others in this negative appearances, we have been acting on blind faith. Here's an example of this, going back to Moses. You see, the guy shows up to cross the Red Sea, all fitted in scuba gear. And Moses says, I think we have some serious faith issues here. And that's an example of blind faith, putting your faith in all these outer things. And in contrast to that, understanding faith is based on immutable principle. Katie says there are some things that God has indissolubly joined together that it is impossible for even God to put them asunder. They are bound together by fixed, immutable laws. In other words, understanding faith is a deep and inner knowing that spiritual principle is always operating and never varies. It's just as reliable as the mathematical principle that 2 + 2 is always 4. If we add those numbers up and get something different, it's not a fault of the principle, it's a fault in the way we've applied the principle, isn't it? And understanding faith knows that there are infinite possibilities existing in that absolute realm, unconditional love, perfect wisdom, and overflowing abundance. The kingdom of heaven that Jesus spoke about again and again is that realm of infinite possibilities. And we all know that that kingdom is where? Within, absolutely. So faith is that deep knowing of that kingdom within that makes all things possible, no matter what anyone tells us. When I taught middle school students, I always had this poem hanging on the wall, and I bet a lot of you know it. It's The Mustn'ts by Shel Silverstein. Do you know it? Oh, you're about to, okay. Listen to the mustn'ts, child. Listen to the don'ts. Listen to the shouldn'ts, the impossibles, the won'ts. Listen to the never haves. Then listen close to me. Anything can happen, child. Anything can be. I read a story the other day about a woman whose name is Edna Butterfield, and she wrote this story. She said, my husband, Ron, once taught a class of mentally impaired teenagers. Looking at his students' capabilities rather than their limitations, Ron taught them to play chess, restore furniture, and repair electrical appliances. Most important, he taught them to believe in themselves. Young Bobby soon proved how well he had learned that lesson. One day he brought in a broken toaster to repair. And as he walked in the classroom door, he had the broken toaster under one arm, and under the other arm he had a half loaf of bread, and in his hands he had jelly and butter. You see, he was able to see what was going to happen, that toaster was going to be repaired no matter what. And that's what happens when we live in a faithful consciousness that there is a greater reality than we see. We live in divine expectancy of our ever-unfolding good. There's an old saying that if you go to the well with a 1-gallon bucket, you can't come home with 2 gallons of water. and exercising our faith, we embrace step 3 of the Lazarus Blueprint. Who remembers what that is? Step 3, anybody remember? Great. Remember? Well, I did a great job teaching that class, didn't I? Good. Give me a gold star for that one. Great expectation. Does that ring a bell? Yeah, great expectations. It's the step 3 of the Lazarus Blueprint. And knowing, that just means once we have this kind of understanding faith, we do live joyously in expectation of our good, knowing that the kingdom of infinite possibility is already within. We perceive the good, we expect the best, and we know that all is unfolding in perfect divine order. Now, at this point, as we continue to study the creative process, I'm going to invite you to think of something that you would like to manifest in your lives. This might be something that others have told you is impossible. It might be a problem that you just wish to resolve. It might be a dream that you have deferred. Or it just might be something that you're feeling inspired to create or transform. And holding your dream or problem in consciousness, let's just review real quickly the 2 steps that we've done thus far in the creative process. First, let there be light. Let there be an awareness that you can turn away from the struggle or the chaos and know that light is the reality of God within all creation and within you. And that light is not just a tiny little spark, but all the power and goodness of the divine. You are, as we said last week, the light of the world. All creativity is simply a matter of releasing the power that was prepared for you from the foundation of the universe. And step 2, let there be a firmament. Let there be a firmament of faith. Believe in all the possibilities you cannot see. Develop a deep inner perception, a conviction of trust, assurance, and confidence in divine principle. Know that there is divine order in the universe, and that divine order is the omnipresence of good, of God, even when it's not visible. So as we align ourselves with this divine order, we understand that this does not mean that divine order is a distant puppeteer God pulling strings on our behalf, but instead that we are putting ourselves in line with God's universal principle of love and goodness. And no matter how scary life gets, we have always a safety net. Sometimes life can be a roller coaster. We all know that. And the scarier the ride, the more we need consciousness of divine principle. That's our seatbelt, if you will. And Charles Fillmore writes in The Revealing Word, and we'll end with this today, when faith is exercised deep in spiritual consciousness, it finds its abode. And under divine law, without disappointment, it brings results that are seemingly miraculous. And that's what will happen with all of us as we go through this process. So we're going to go in a moment into prayer and meditation about this. And let's begin that today by affirming the very foundation of our faith in the light of God, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.